Look past the range of the moment, you who cry that you fear to compete with men of superior intelligence, that their mind is a threat to your livelihood, that the strong leave no chance to the weak in a market of voluntary trade. What determines the material value of your work? Nothing but the productive effort of your mind. If you lived on a desert island, the less efficient the thinking of your brain, the less your physical labor would bring you, and you could spend your life on a single routine, collecting a precarious harvest, or hunting with bow and arrows, unable to think any further. But when you live in a rational society, where men are free to trade, you receive an incalculable bonus. The material value of your work is determined not only by your effort, but by the effort of the best productive minds who exist in the world around you. When you work in a modern factory, you are paid not only for your labor, but for all the productive genius which has made that factory possible, for the work of the industrialist who built it, for the work of the investor who saved the money to risk on the untried and the new, for the work of the engineer who designed the machines of which you were pushing the levers, for the work of the inventor who created the product which you spend your time on making, for the work of the scientist who discovered the laws that went into the making of that product, for the work of the philosopher who taught men how to think and whom you spend your time denouncing. The machine, the frozen form of a living intelligence, is the power that expands the potential of your life by raising the productivity of your time. If you worked as a blacksmith in the mystic's Middle Ages, the whole of your earning capacity would consist of an iron bar produced by your hands in days and days of effort. How many tons of rail do you produce per day if you work for Hank Reardon? Would you dare to claim that the size of your paycheck was created solely by your physical labor, and that those rails were the product of your muscles? The standard of living of that blacksmith is all that your muscles are worth. The rest is a gift from Hank Reardon. Every man is free to rise as far as he's able or willing, but it's only the degree to which he thinks that determines the degree to which he'll rise. Physical labor, as such, can extend no further than the range of the moment. The man who does no more than physical labor consumes the material value equivalent of his own contribution to the process of production, and leaves no further value, neither for himself nor others. But the man who produces an idea in any field of rational endeavor, the man who discovers new knowledge, is the permanent benefactor of humanity. Material products can't be shared. They belong to some ultimate consumer. It is only the value of an idea that can be shared with unlimited numbers of men, making all sharers richer at no one's sacrifice or loss, raising the productive capacity of whatever labor they perform. It is the value of his own time that the strong of the intellect transfers to the weak, letting them work on the jobs he discovered, while devoting his time to further discoveries. This is mutual trade to mutual advantage. The interests of the mind are one, no matter what the degree of intelligence, among men who desire to work and don't seek or expect the unearned. In proportion to the mental energy he spent, the man who creates a new invention receives but a small percentage of his value in terms of material payment, no matter what fortune he makes, no matter what millions he earns. But the man who works as a janitor in the factory producing that invention receives an enormous payment in proportion to the mental effort that his job requires of him. And the same is true of all men between, on all levels of ambition and ability. The man at the top of the intellectual pyramid contributes the most to all those below him, but gets nothing except his material payment, receiving no intellectual bonus from others to add to the value of his time. The man at the bottom, who, left to himself, would starve in his hopeless ineptitude, contributes nothing to those above him, but receives the bonus of all of their brains. Such is the nature of the competition between the strong and the weak of the intellect. Such is the pattern of exploitation for which you have damned the strong. Such was the service we had given you, and were glad and willing to give. What did we ask in return? Nothing but freedom. We required that you leave us free to function, free to think and to work as we choose, free to take our own risks and to bear our own losses, free to earn our own profits and to make our own fortunes, free to gamble on your rationality, to submit our products to your judgment for the purpose of a voluntary trade, to rely on the objective value of our work and on your mind's ability to see it, free to count on your intelligence and honesty, and to deal with nothing but your mind. Such was the price we asked, which you chose to reject as too high. You decided to call it unfair that we, who had dragged you out of your hovels and provided you with modern apartments, with radios, movies, and cars, should own our palaces and yachts. You decided that you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits, that you did not want us to deal with your mind, but to deal instead with your gun. Our answer to that was, may you be damned. Our answer came true. You are. You did not care to compete in terms of intelligence. You are now competing in terms of brutality. You did not care to allow rewards to be won by successful production. You are now running a race in which rewards are won by successful plunder. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. You have now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion. Your system is a legal civil war where men gang up on one another and struggle for possession of the law, which they use as a club over rivals, till another gang wrests it from their clutch and clubs them with it in their turn, all of them clamoring protestations of service to an unnamed public's unspecified good. You had said that you saw no difference between economic and political power, between the power of money and the power of guns, no difference between reward and punishment, no difference between purchase and plunder, no difference between pleasure and fear, no difference between life and death. You are learning the difference now. Some of you might plead the excuse of your ignorance, of a limited mind and a limited range. But the damned and the guiltiest among you are the men who had the capacity to know, yet chose to blank out reality. The men who were willing to sell their intelligence into cynical servitude to force. The contemptible breed of those mystics of science who profess a devotion to some sort of pure knowledge, the purity, consisting of their claim that such knowledge has no practical purpose on this earth, who reserve their logic for inanimate matter, but believe that the subject of dealing with men requires and deserves no rationality, who scorn money and sell their souls in exchange for a laboratory supplied by loot. And since there is no such thing as non-practical knowledge, or any sort of disinterested action, since they scorn the use of their science for the purpose and profit of life, they deliver their science to the service of death, to the only practical purpose it can ever have for looters, to inventing weapons of coercion and destruction. They, the intellects, who seek escape from moral values, they are the damned on this earth. Theirs is the guilt beyond forgiveness. Do you hear me, Dr. Robert Stadler? But it is not to him that I wish to speak. I am speaking to those among you who have retained some sovereign shred of their soul, unsold and unstamped, to the order of others. If in the chaos of the motives that have made you listen to the radio tonight, there was an honest, rational desire to learn what is wrong with the world, you are the man whom I wish to address. By the rules and terms of my code, one owes a rational statement to those whom it does concern, and who are making an effort to know. Those who are making an effort to fail to understand me are not a concern of mine. I'm speaking to those who desire to live and to recapture the honor of their soul. Now that you know the truth about your world, stop supporting your own destroyers. The evil of the world is made possible by nothing but the sanction you give it. Withdraw your sanction. Withdraw your support. Do not try to live on your enemy's terms or to win at a game where they're setting the rules. Do not seek the favor of those who enslaved you. Do not beg for alms from those who have robbed you, be it subsidies, loans, or jobs. Do not join their team to recoup what they've taken by helping them rob your neighbors. One cannot hope to maintain one's life by accepting bribes, to condone one's destruction. Do not struggle for profit, success, or security at the price of a lien on your right to exist. Such a lien is not to be paid off. The more you pay them, the more they will demand. The greater the values you seek or achieve, the more vulnerably helpless you become. Theirs is a system of white blackmail devised to bleed you not by means of your sins, but by means of your love for existence. Do not attempt to rise on the looter's terms or to climb a ladder while they're holding the ropes. Do not allow their hands to touch the only power that keeps them in power, your living ambition. Go on strike in the manner I did. Use your mind and skill in private. Extend your knowledge. Develop your ability. but do not share your achievements with others. Do not try to produce a fortune with a looter riding on your back. Stay on the lowest rung of their ladder. Earn no more than your barest survival. Do not make an extra penny to support the looter's state. Since you're captive, act as a captive. Do not help them pretend that you're free. Be the silent, incorruptible enemy they dread. When they force you, obey. But do not volunteer. Never volunteer a step in their direction, or a wish, or a plea, or a purpose. Do not help a hold-up man to claim that he acts as your friend and benefactor. Do not help your jailers to pretend that their jail is your natural state of existence. Do not help them to fake reality. That fake is the only dam holding off their secret terror, the terror of knowing they're unfit to exist. Remove it and let them drown. Your sanction is their only life belt.